Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Wednesday, January 19th. Barnard. Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss. Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Anderson.
Here.
Barnard.
Excuse.
Rothfuss.
Excuse.
28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer by Rabbi Harley.
We're on? Thank you. We thank the gods of technology for the ability to communicate, and we all look to our own sources of inspiration and of learning to help us as we struggle through the complex and challenging issues that we face in our relatively short legislative session. We ask for the guidance to help us be motivated by our sense of love and to put in its place the fear that so often threatens to overwhelm us. We ask for the strength of character and the courage and the communal support so that we not let our fears drive us to the horrible but unfortunately common phenomenon of scapegoating, where we look to blame some other group for problems that are ultimately our problems, where instead of confronting our own economic concerns and struggles with creating jobs, we try to blame the immigrants or the aliens for what they may be struggling with. Aside from however we deal with those issues, where when we have problems and dilemmas in our families and particularly in our marriages, please help us to avoid putting the blame for that onto gays and lesbians, to people whose relationships are independent of the struggles that we have, even though we have to struggle with the legal dilemmas of sorting out what should be the proper state rights. We ask for that strength so that in the process of confronting these difficult issues, we not go for the easy way out of blaming others for our own problems of scapegoating, and hope that this week, this Martin Luther King week, this week where we talk about equality and dignity, can remind us throughout our whole year to recognize the dangers of where that kind of scapegoating has gotten us. And obviously I speak as a rabbi representing a people who have been blamed in so many cultures and so many generations for other people's problems and then persecuted because of that, and pray that we, as we confront our problems today, can learn to take our own responsibility instead of imposing that onto other groups that ultimately are independent of ours. And if we can do that, as difficult as that is, then our love will override our fears, and we will serve the God that all of us seek to understand and seek to serve. And with that hope and prayer in mind, I ask we could all say, Amen.
Please join me in prayer. I pledge allegiance.
the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 18th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
The doctor for the day is Joseph McGinley. Dr. McGinley comes from Casper. Thank you, Doctor. The nurse for the day is Toma Nesbitt, and Toma comes from Cheyenne. Thank you very much for your service. On this day in history in Wyoming, the Albany County Courthouse was completed, and that was in the year 1872. Reports from standing committees.
January the 19th, 2011, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 55, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 19th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 58, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Introduction and reading. Go ahead, finish up.
January the 19th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 9, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 18th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 47, reports back with recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Perkins. No, Senator Hines. Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 18th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 77, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Martin. Excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Now we'll go to the introduction and reading and reference of bills. Senate File 117. First reading of the bill. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 117, Wyoming Reclamation and Restoration Center, an act relating to the University of Wyoming, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
Senate File 117 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senate File 115, reading... Clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 115, DUI, Child Endangerment Fines, and Act Relating to the Operation of Motor Vehicles, sponsored by Senator Ross.
That was the first reading of Senate File 115. That bill has been referred to Committee Number 8. Transportation. Bills on second reading. Yes, Senator Martin.
Mr. President, I would move that we lay back Senate File 24 for one day. I'd ask the State Treasurer's Office after we spoke yesterday, and I'm not satisfied with the information that they provided me, and I'd like to have that before we continue with the discussion.
Senate File 24 has been asked to be laid back. That will be done without yes, Senator Geis. Yes, will we? But I believe Senate File 9 has been read in. The request is that be referred to Committee Number 2. Seeing no objections, so ordered. Okay, going on now with second reading. Senate File 24, second reading of the Senate file. Reading clerk will please read the Senate.
But not the one that was laid back.
Yep. Oh, that's been, yeah, that's been. And then we'll be referred. We'll read that in now.
Okay.
And then we'll lay it back.
Senate File 24, State Investments, sponsored by Senator Martin.
And that Senate File 24 has been laid back until second reading tomorrow. Senate File 36, second reading of the Senate File. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 36, Seclusion and Restraint in School, sponsored by Senator Case.
There are no amendments on Senate File 36. Senate File 36 having been read two separate times, the question is? Yes, Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, okay.
Senator Nutting, we have no record of any amendments. There's nothing attached to the bill. The clerk indicates that she has no knowledge of any amendments. Perhaps if there's been some oversight, you might bring those amendments on third reading. Or if it's, I guess you could possibly ask that the bill be laid back. But I'll leave that to your call, Senator Nutting.
No, Mr. President. Third reading will be fine. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Nutting, I would suggest that you discuss the desired amendments with staff, and then they'll see that those make it to their proper location.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. With that, Senate File 36, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 71, second reading of the Senate File. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 71, Education Under Safety Courses, sponsored by Senator Christensen.
Senate File 71 does have a number of amendments on it. The reading clerk will please read the first amendment, that being the Scott Amendment.
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 4.
Senator Scott, would you like to move that amendment? Present it. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of second reading amendment number 1. Two items here. First is just a drafting correction, standard thing we do, removing the suches. Second is we are inserting a sentence that provides that the instructors should be approved by the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. My understanding is that's what they already do, that those instructors are approved by it. And then a precaution. There's a provision in 217303 that says that if you're going to be an instructor, you've got to be approved through the Professional Teaching Standards Board. And I remember how that board destroyed the driver's ed in this state by requiring that only certified teachers provide driver's ed. And it's unnecessary to have that board involved in this, with the Game and Fish being the appropriate people to say who knows how to teach these courses. So basically what the amendment does is says that Professional Teaching Standards Board, you don't have any responsibilities here. You don't have to worry about it. They haven't caused any trouble to date, but with that provision there, theoretically there could be trouble, and this will keep them from having to worry about whether they've got to do a whole additional certification for instructors for these hunter safety courses. So, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, that's what the amendment does. It's relatively simple. It's a precaution, given the way those other statutes are written. I think probably a necessary precaution.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Any questions of Senator Scott or any comments in regard to the amendment? Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, just some additional clarification. When we talk about the intent of this amendment to be approved by the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, there are some very clear guidelines, but one of the most important ones, I think, which goes to some of the other concerns that have been expressed, is those instructors have a background done by the Department of Family Services. And so there is there's that level of backgrounding done by Department of Family Services when you're going to mix those instructors with especially in this case, in an exclusive fifth and sixth grade environment. And then it goes on from there with a whole list of qualifications, testing, and so forth. But I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Other comments in regard to the First Amendment, second reading? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. There is another amendment. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 71. That is the Ross Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 5.
Senator Ross, would you like to move that amendment and explain it, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 71. Members of the body, this is a simple amendment, but it takes care of what I believe was the issue that I raised yesterday with regard to elective courses, particularly in certain school districts of fifth and sixth grade, where there isn't such elective courses. So what this does is simply add in the language or as an extracurricular activity so that it may be offered in those fifth and sixth grades, but as an extracurricular activity, perhaps before or after school, whatever, and so as to accommodate the various different school districts throughout the state of Wyoming. I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Are there any questions or comments in regard to the second amendment being offered? Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, this really, I appreciate this amendment. It really goes to the extra level of spelling out extracurricular, and so it clearly identifies that the school districts have a wide range of options, and it really also helps put the burden and creates that stronger relationship with our Game and Fish Department. When we get into extracurricular, we're not talking necessarily about location necessarily. However, in talking with Game and Fish, especially as it might be worrisome to extracurricular issues, it would be limited to fifth and sixth grade, and that's per Game and Fish. That they're very clear and very supportive of, even if it goes to extracurricular and it's offered from the school, it's clearly limited to fifth and sixth grade students.
Thank you, Senator. Are there other comments in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment, second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 71 has passed the Senate. Our next amendment second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 71, and that is the Christensen Amendment. And would the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 5.
Senator, would you like to move that amendment and explain it, please?
Mr. President, I move amendment number 3, Senate File 71, page 2, line 5, after courses inserted, a course offered under this subsection shall only be open to school-aged children residing within the district. That is really addressing specifically
thank you. Senator Scott?
Mr. President, I support this amendment, but I would advise the Senate, I'll intend to come back tomorrow. There's a little problem because occasionally in the rural areas you get kids who attend schools in the district, but they don't reside in the district. They reside over the county line. We have those in the rural school in my area, and they live in Carbon County. They attend a school in Natrona County because it's a lot closer, so it's a lot more sensible and cheaper for all concerned. And the local people and the school districts are sensible about how they do it. So we'll have to just add two words to this. I think we ought to pass it now, and then I will bring a slight corrective amendment on third reading.
Thank you. Other comments in regard to this particular amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 71, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. That amendment has passed. We now have the fourth, I think, and final amendment, that being the Christensen Amendment also. Would the reading clerk please read second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 71 in, please.
Senate File 71, second reading amendment number 4, page 2, line 16.
Senator Christian, that is your amendment. Would you like to move the amendment and explain it, please?
Mr. President, I'd move the amendment to Senate Amendment 4, move to pass Amendment 4 to Senate File 71, page 2, line 16, after the word district, insert during school hours. And what that refers to is that exception of no charge, that if it is during the school hours, as such as an elective, there is no charge. However, if it goes into the extracurricular, if it's offered as an extracurricular, what this does allow, and this speaks to the funding questions, that while the school may help arrange it, but it allows to have some of those costs recovered up to $10 per statute.
Thank you, Senator Christian. Are there comments or questions in regard to that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 71, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed the Senate. We are now back on the bill. Senate File 71, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list? Mr. Majority Floor Leader Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a consent list. The consent list for third reading today is as follows. Senate File 5, State Lands Improvements. Senate File 6, Animal Damage Management Board Reports. Senate File 7, State Fair. Senate File 15, Court Jurisdiction. And Senate File 20, Election Code Revisions.
Thank you. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is... Oh, yes.
File 7 removed from the consent list. I did have a couple questions about what happened yesterday, and I'd just like some clarification. So if we could remove that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Senate File 7 has been removed from the consent list at the request of Senator Perkins. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 5, Senate File 6, Senate File 15, Senate File 20. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 5, are there any changes? Scott, conflict? Any changes? Vote closing. Vote closed. Senate File 5, 29 ayes, 1 conflict. Senate File 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 6, 30 ayes. Senate File 15, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 15, 30 ayes. Senate File 20, are there any changes?
Perkins, aye to no.
Perkins, aye to no.
Meyer, aye to no.
Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Jennings, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 20. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 5, Senate File 6, Senate File 15, Senate File 20 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 7, are there any? The reading clerk will read that bill in, please.
Senate File 7, State Fair, an act relating to the State Fair, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Perkins, would you like to go ahead and address your concern.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I have to confess when and I apologize to the body, when the second reading amendment came through and I looked at it, I became so confused I didn't even know what question to ask. But as it went through and as it went through the second reading amendment, it seemed like that we went through and undid almost everything that the bill did in the first place. If you could help me understand, and again, I apologize for my lateness on this, but if you could help me understand what this did, because I didn't understand the explanation yesterday, and the more I've looked at it, I've become more confused. I'd appreciate an explanation of that so I can know whether I can vote for it or against it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Geis, would you like to respond, please?
Mr. President, well, you can vote it up or down. It's okay, but what we did with that amendment, we put all the power under the commission, it's the director of agriculture now. And with those amendments, it gives him authority to hire a manager of state fair And he can delegate some of those duties to that manager if he so chooses. But everything under the state fair is under the control of the Commission of Agriculture and our director. And the manager of the state fair has to answer to the director, and he can fire him if he wants or pat him on the back.
Yes. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, we're early in the session. This is the first one of these we've encountered. When you get something that's as thoroughly amended as this one was and complicated and difficult to track, particularly where it's done on the second reading, I would suggest to the Senate one of the options, if people are a little uncomfortable and having difficulty, and I'm having difficulty understanding what we really did, one of the possibilities would be to move to re-refer this back to the committee, which could then look at the amendment, see what they really did, and if necessary, prepare a substitute bill. You can't do that late in the session. You could do it at this point if it's important enough to the Senate, or we could decide that the explanation we heard of what happened, we just heard, makes a lot of sense, and let's just proceed. But I would suggest to the Senate, if anybody thinks it's important and remains confused as to the real effect of what we did or uncertain about it, that, Mr. President, that would be an option at this point in the session that would not jeopardize a bill. And we could handle other bills in a similar fashion if we had to.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Bebout.
And thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. President. I would hope that the body, and that's certainly an option, and if you wanted to do that, we could do that, but I would hope that the body would vote on this and vote in the affirmative and pass this. And the reason for the amendment yesterday on second reading was to clarify the Department of Agriculture and that director. And if you looked at the language, that had been stricken, and there was confusion about whether it's the director of the Department of Ag or would that person, in fact, be the director of the state fair. This was a clarifying amendment to be sure that you understood that. And when it was originally drafted, it was in that part of the statutes and all the rest of the statutes pertaining to the Department of Agriculture. It referred to the director. So by the fact that it was in that part of the statutes, it was the director of the Department of Ag. We wanted to clarify that. Excuse me. There are other parts of the bill that are put in there to give the state fair, the manager, the ability to do what he does and have the latitude to work for the director and accomplish what he wants to do. I really think that amendment clarified that issue. I think it's a good bill. And certainly if something, I really think the work product that leaves the Senate doesn't need the House to take care of it. I think this is a good bill, and I would hope that you would support it.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. Senate File 7, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings? Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
President Anderson,
aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 7, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 7 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, We're at that order of business for the consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Rossless, would you please approach the desk?
The Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 92.
Senate File 92, Natural Gas Storage, and Act Relating to Natural Gas Storage, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
You've heard the reading of the bill?
I've got a...
Excuse me, we have an amendment.
Yep. Was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of Whole rise to report a due to the recommendation that Senate File 92, Natural Gas Storage, do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask it to be read in at this time.
Senate File 92, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I would also move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 92, and I would like to explain the bill. Members of the Senate, before I really get into the bill, I want to talk a little bit about the existing statutes that are already in our law, and that'd be 35-7. Let me get them here. 35-7-3201 to 35-7-3205. And in the mid-80s, the natural gas industry was in a different situation than we have today, and we had a utility company, a regulated utility company, that in fact had a storage reservoir. And back then we had take-or-pay contracts, and we were very heavily regulated, not only in the utility side of it, but also in the natural gas transmission. And there was an issue that came up with then a provider of regulated gas to the end users that needed some corrections done to deal with the issue that had come up in 1985 and 86. In 87, the legislature passed legislation. That is a statute that I just referred to that solved that problem. As we fast forward to today, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, we have a situation now where a regulated utility is in a desire to try to sell that natural gas storage reservoir. And the statutes that have been in on our books since 1987, there's a certain provision of that that in essence prevents that sale from going through. And the meaning of the purpose of the bill is to eliminate that statute to allow the regulated utility to be able to have a disposition of assets of that particular resource. Now, one has to understand that we have a reservoir for storage gas that's in particular question. And this reservoir is located over north of Elk Mountain. And what the issue that gets to is a cushion gas, and we have working gas in that reservoir. The cushion gas, the regulated utility is authorized to pass on the cost of that to their rate base. So all these years, they've been passing that on to their customers. The working gas, that's a gas in the reservoir, they are not able to do that. As we look at the situation today, a lot of that gas was bought at one price, and now the gas is worth a lot more money. And in order for the regulated utility to sell that particular reservoir to the private sector, they are not able to do that because all of the money involved in that particular part of the cushion gas would, in fact, go to the rate base payers. And that's really an issue of a taking. You can almost make that argument. And, Mr. Chairman, what we did, and we heard from the PSC, and I'll get into the amendment at this particular time, is that they felt that all the statutes should remain on our books except for the one particular statute that dealt with that issue, which was 37-3204, rate sales of stored gas. And, Mr. Chairman, I would like to, at this particular time, talk about that amendment and ask for your question on that amendment, because that truly is the essence of the bill. It allows that regulated utility to move forward and sell that reservoir to a regulated mover of gas that will be regulated by FERC. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions on that particular standing committee amendment at this time.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Any questions regarding the amendment, standing committee amendment number one?
Question.
All right. Seeing no questions or discussion on the amendment, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the standing committee of amendment number one to Senate file 92, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Please say nay. The motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number one to Senate file 92 has passed. Back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and back on the bill. And I want to talk about some of the benefits to everybody so they understand if this bill moves forward, what will be the result to the ratepayers. First of all, it will go to an independent entity that will come into the state of Wyoming. They're going to spend a considerable amount of money to improve that storage. And then the rate base that had been charged to those people because of the Cushing gas will not be charged. So there will be a benefit every year to those consumers in the central part of our state that will not have to be charged in their rate base for the Cushing gas. The second thing it will do is, because of all these years that charge has been passed on to the consumers, there will be a negotiated rate and the price and the sale of the reservoir to the independent third party, and that will be left up to the Public Service Commission. The other thing I want everybody to understand is, if this bill passes, they still have to go in front of the PSC, because there's law in there that says any disposition of assets, they have to get the approval of the PSC. So that will still happen. The PSC will still be available to be sure that this is done properly. And the last thing, Mr. Chairman, that I think is very important, this is another avenue and a way to do something with our tremendous reserves of natural gas we have in this state. We all talk about the differential and the issue of pipelines and takeaway capacity. If you think about it, having a big reservoir there that's a regulated reservoir under FERC, that they will be able to take gas when the prices are low, possibly, and fill it in the summer and sell it in the winter. So it's another avenue and a place to put our gas, but ultimately will have benefits to the state in terms of revenues on our natural gas production. I would ask for your favorable consideration. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Questions on Senate File 92 or discussion? Question has been called. Seeing no discussion, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 92, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 92 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 101. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 101, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, sponsored by Senator Cole. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. That reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Cole, Jennings, Linden, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Cole.
Moving the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 101. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 101, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment, and I'll get to the amendment after I explain the bill.
Thank you. Proceed,
Senate
Senator.
File 101 comes to you from a constituent of mine that discovered that with the Hathaway Scholarship Program, we limit those students attending community colleges to 4 semesters. There are a number of curriculums at our community colleges that exceed 4 semesters. What this bill does is it says that we will extend that for certain curriculums. Now, I would draw your attention to the handout I did here that I got from the Community College Commission, a laundry list of the different curriculums out there that require more than 4 semesters. Particularly, I would draw attention to the nursing curriculum. 6 out of the 7 community colleges offer that. This is a state right now that is struggling with nurses. There's a nursing shortage. So that's what the bill does. Very, very simply, it extends for curriculums that exceed 4 semesters, the option for that student to take 5 and sometimes 6 semesters to get their degree in what they're trying to do here. So with that, I'd like to talk about the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment goes to the fact that the Hathaway Scholarship Program, when we created the Hathaway Scholarship Program, it was a policy decision that we would not expend monies outside of the state of Wyoming. In other words, you had to attend a community college or the University of Wyoming. What we have at some of these community colleges, we have 4-year curriculums offered by Black Hills State, University of Mary, are just 2 examples. The Standing Committee Amendment says that specifically the student who receives Hathaway Scholarship benefits has to attend the community colleges and get a degree from there, or the University of Wyoming. I try to answer questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Questions or discussion regarding Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, just to make sure I know what the Standing Committee Amendment does. For example, a student is enrolled at a community college, and the curriculum therein, rather than being under the auspices of the University of Wyoming, is under a out-of-state university. For example, a teaching certificate or pharmacy are the 2 that I know of that are under the auspices, and the degree is granted by that out-of-state university, they would not be eligible for Hathaway funding for those courses or for that semester. Tell me how this is actually going to work. As I read this amendment, I believe it says if you're enrolled in, and I'll use teaching as an example, the degree is going to be granted by an out-of-state university. You go on to your 2 years. You would not be eligible for Hathaway funding, even though you are at a Wyoming community college. Do I understand correctly?
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, some of these out-of-state institutions, you could be attending Casper College, you know, for example. And maybe the good senator from Natrona County might like to talk about that. You can actually get a 4-year degree while attending Casper College from Black Hills State, for example. So Hathaway scholarship money is not expended on that anyway. But what this does with this particular curriculum, we want to make sure that if a student is in one of these curriculums, that monies don't go to that student if they are, in fact, attending Black Hills State while at Casper College. I hope that explains that.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that same line of questioning, we'd had a discussion about this and wanted to make sure that the degree was a degree from a Wyoming school. That was always the intention of Hathaway, that the money would stay within our community college university system. So I'm reading the amendment, and I think the amendment really wants to say, on page 2, line 20, after scholarship, and shall not support enrollment in coursework at an institution other than those provided by a Wyoming community college or university. Because coursework at an institution other than a Wyoming is still in the Wyoming community college. I guess the definition of coursework, does that mean, is there a better definition of coursework? I don't understand. In other words, coursework means what you're actually doing there. So if the coursework is being provided by the University of Mary, it's not eligible. But the way I read this, I guess it would be coursework provided by Wyoming Community College and or by the university, not just coursework. I guess I'm a little hazy on that. And I want to make sure somebody can't use this to go out of state and stay just in Casper College or Sheridan.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
you all remember back when we worked on Hathaway and everything, one of the points that we had in Hathaway was that it was also a little bit of economic stimulus, and that money coming through the scholarships to the university and to the colleges was spent in Wyoming. What we're trying to do here with this amendment and this bill is to make sure that we continue on that same train of thought. If we're going to give a scholarship, that scholarship money should be spent on courses coming out of Wyoming. And where we see that that may not happen would be the Casper College in my town. We have 20% of the courses offered, the four-year courses offered there, offered by universities or colleges that are not based in Wyoming. So what we're trying to do here is make sure that those courses that are degreed out of state aren't included in the payments for Hathaway. And I think that kind of stays with the original intent of the economic impact of the Hathaway scholarship.
Thank you, Senator Jennings. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the comments from my colleague in Natrona County. And just to perhaps emphasize what we were trying to do with this standing committee amendment, to speak to what our good friend from Johnson County was talking about, this is a policy discussion, no question about that. I believe that the standing committee amendment stays with the original intent of the Hathaway Scholarship Program. We could certainly have the discussion about whether or not we would ever want to extend those benefits to those programs that are offered by other institutions on our community college campuses. I think that's a discussion that probably we could have in the future and maybe should have. These are students who are normally site-bound. They're not able to travel anywhere, and they're taking advantage of programs that are offered through these partnerships that our colleges out there have created. We've chosen not to do that. This standing committee amendment makes it explicitly clear that we want to support the University of Wyoming and our community colleges. Coursework at other institutions is not covered.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I have some reservations about this amendment. And it comes from, we've got some programs in Casper, and I, comments may apply more to one that is no longer offered than one that is. And I want to make sure, as I understood when we had the OT course that was out of University of North Dakota, which I believe we no longer have, but some of the coursework was all done by local people. I knew some of the occupational therapists in Casper that were teaching it. It was done through Casper College, but the degree came from the University of North Dakota. We used to joke about University of North Dakota at Casper. And as I understood it, the mixture of courses that they took were some specialized ones, which although done locally, were technically University of North Dakota courses, and some ones that were Casper College courses open to other students, and where a student was taking a mixture, was going to get a degree from UND, but was taking a mixture of specialized UND courses and Casper College courses that were open to other Casper College students and were part of the general curriculum there, would the portion of time that they were taking Casper College courses count toward being able to have at least partial Hathaway scholarships, or are we cutting those students out entirely with this amendment? And I'm not an expert in this area, but I'm a little concerned that we may discriminate against some pretty good Wyoming students taking courses in Wyoming that will benefit Wyoming.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little concerned, and I kind of can see where the good senator from Natrona County is coming from, the tall senator. So if you could answer some questions for me, do these students who are attending these classes, do they pay a tuition to Casper College or to a Wyoming Community College? If they pay that, are they paying money for these classes that the community colleges receive? And we also want to think if they're living here in Casper or Laramie, that they're also contributing to the economy with board and room and that type of things too. So I just have a question about how you're going to differentiate this, because they might even be using instructors at Casper College or a community college. And so I just have some questions on how we're going to accomplish this.
Senator Jennings.
What pays in Wyoming stays in Wyoming. What pays in Wyoming stays in Wyoming. If you have a local instructor that lives in Wyoming, that money stays in Wyoming. If you have the university, since we're picking on the University of North Dakota, if we have the University of North Dakota billing our community college for a tuition, then it doesn't pay that.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do appreciate the comments made by my friend to the left, friend to the right. We have an interesting thing that's going on in higher education now. It's a whole different kettle of fish than it used to be 20 years ago, for example. A lot of our students who move into that upper division coursework and are site-bound at our community colleges, quite frankly, have a yours, mine, ours, and whatever they can gain off of the Internet. We've got a lot of different kinds of coursework that takes place out there now. The good senator from Natrona County brought up a very good point and talked about a degree program specific to, say, occupational therapy. He's exactly right. Many of those courses we were able to offer right there through Casper College, and those dovetailed in with the program offered by the University of North Dakota. So then those students would qualify for some assistance from the state of Wyoming on those Wyoming courses. Those courses offered through the University of North Dakota, they would not. This bill makes it very clear that we're not changing the Hathaway Scholarship Program other than to allow those community college students to utilize another semester or two for those programs that carry through a consistent or solid 2 years period of time. For example, if you major in radiologic technology, for example, you might start in June and you don't finish until two more Junes, two consecutive years. As it stands now, this Hathaway Scholarship is offered for four semesters, but not beyond that. In some cases, these are some of our best students out there going into healthcare professions that we really need them. And so, speaking on and in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, I think that it keeps us on course where we've been before. We can certainly have that policy discussion in the future if we want to expand what we're doing for our students in terms of Hathaway scholarships.
Question has been called. Question on amendment number one by the Standing Committee. Are you ready? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101 has passed. Back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Question has been called on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 101, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 3. Will the reading clerk please read in the bill?
Senate File 3, Campaign Finance Organizations. and Act relating to campaign finance, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 3, Campaign Finance Organizations. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to start off and fess up to there is an error in the standing committee report that was entered as this bill being unamended is really not correct. There was an amendment on the bill in committee, and it did pass the committee 4-5. And it's my own fault. I signed the report.
4-5.
It passed 4-1. I'm sorry. Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I signed a report that indicated that it was unamended. So I want to just start out by saying the committee proposed an amendment to this bill, and we will talk about that amendment when I get done explaining it. But that I just want to start out by saying that that it was amended in committee, and the report doesn't reflect that, but we're going to clear that up with the Committee of the Whole amendment, which will be offered after I finish my explanation.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I do apologize for that. That was poor catch on my part. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with a U.S. Supreme Court case which was issued and ruled on in December of 2009. That case dealt with the right of corporations and other entities besides a person, and by entities we mean things like labor unions, nonprofits, all sorts of organizations, for these entities to make third-party expenditures in support of issues or a candidate. The Supreme Court ruled that state laws cannot prevent or oppose such free speech efforts. And by indirect expenditures, we're talking about things like ads which are not directly under the control of the candidate or the candidate's opponent, so that they're just third-party ads. That also the actual issue that was at play in this particular Supreme Court case was a book that was written by a candidate or about a candidate. The Supreme Court ruled that states can't impose barriers to and laws against this form of free speech expression. We were in a budget session last year. There was a bill proposed to amend Wyoming's law to bring it in compliance with how the Supreme Court has ruled. That bill did not achieve the two-thirds vote necessary to be introduced, and that bill was in the other House. So your Corporations Committee took this issue up in the interim. We brought forward Senate File 3 to conform Wyoming's law to the Supreme Court ruling. And I just want one preface I want to make is that we all live by the Constitution of the United States. And you may not like everything that it says, but that this bill is not about achieving what we want. It's achieving what the Constitution says as interpreted by the only people that can interpret this Constitution in this manner, and that's the United States Supreme Court. So you may not like that I'm talking about corporations supporting campaigns, but it is now the law of the land, and Wyoming's law must comply. And what happens is if our law does not comply, then under the 14th Amendment of the United States and subsequent implementation by the courts of the United States, then we are subject to being sued as a voter rights or a free speech suppression, and we are subject to paying for all the court costs and everything for people that sue us. So we don't have a very good situation. This bill changes it so that our law complies. And you'll see that it does it in two areas. If you look on page 1, beginning at the bottom of the page, we go into 2225-102. And this is where we used to have a prohibition against the direct and indirect support of candidates by these entities. You'll see that the old language on lines 9 through 12, for example, I'm going to back up just a little bit, and it's a very long sentence, but trying to figure out the best way to say this. Anyway, it was illegal to aid, promote, or prevent the nomination or election of any candidate or group of candidates, or to aid or promote the interest, success, or defeat of any political party, bar none. It didn't talk about direct and indirect. The Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United made a distinction between direct and indirect. It said you can't do it directly in states. In essence, it didn't even rule on the topic of direct contributions. So we can still have, in our law, we can still have restrictions on corporations directly making contributions to candidates. But clearly, we can't do it indirectly. So this whole section in 2225-102 has been rewritten to just deal with the issue of direct contributions. And it still prevents them. But we have to allow for the indirect ones. And that's what we do with the new language that begins on page 3, lines 6 through 18. And the prohibitions in this section shall not be construed to prohibit any organization of any kind, including a corporation, partnership, trade union, or professional association, or civic, fraternal, or religious group, or other profit or nonprofit entity, from exercising its First Amendment rights to make independent, there's that word independent, expenditures for speech expressly advocating the election or defeat of a candidate. For the purposes of this subsection, independent expenditure means an expenditure that is made without consultation or coordination with a candidate or an agent of a candidate whose nomination or election the expenditure supports or whose opponent's nomination or election the expenditure opposes. And you can just see that there's a little bit of a conforming amendment in 2225-101. Where we're talking about it being unlawful, including organizations making expenditures under 2225-102K. And that section actually deals with, that would again be another direct contribution, so that makes that still unlawful. That's the essence of the bill, Mr. Chairman, and then what I really just need to emphasize, you may not like corporations or these other entities indirectly supporting candidates or issues, but that's, we can't, unless we want to have our law not to conform with how the Supreme Court has interpreted the Constitution, we need to pass this bill. If we don't pass this bill, we're potentially vulnerable to lawsuits to make our law conform. Now, there is a little bit of a side issue going on here. And I'm a bit of it personally involved. There is a request before the Wyoming Supreme Court at this time to vacate this portion of the law. I don't know how the Wyoming Supreme Court will rule. I suspect maybe they're better lawyers than I am, but I think they'll reach the same conclusion. But that has not happened yet and has oral arguments scheduled for mid-February. So in the meantime, this is Wyoming's law. This is the best solution to change it to make it conform, and it's even better than going to court. Now about the amendment, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but this amendment that's going to be offered by the good senator from Campbell County truly represents what the committee did decide in the standing committee, and it's about disclosure.
Thank you. Would someone like to move to read in that amendment right now or proceed with discussion? Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I ask that the committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 3 be read in.
Senate File 3, committee of the whole amendment number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 3. Basically, what this will immediately tell the public the names of the principal funders of the independent expenditures. As you know, we all have to write on any have on any written or spoken ad, we have to have who is paying for that ad when we are advertising ourselves. So when someone that is independent of a candidate or an issue is working for or against that issue, they may put on it the committee to, or paid for by the some name that none of us are familiar with. We don't know where they get their money. We don't know much about them. So this amendment would address that, and it would state that anyone that advertising, print, or announcement would have to name the candidate, organization, or committee paying for the advertising. And if it's an independent expenditures from these groups or individuals that we don't know anything about, they would have to name the three largest contributors to their campaign fund or to their income fund that is paying for this ad, so we get an idea of who is behind the ad, who is supporting or opposing a candidate or an issue that is coming before us. I felt that this was important because anymore we hear a lot of advertising that just says paid for the committee to elect or the committee to support an issue, and we really don't know who's behind that advertisement. What is particularly disturbing to me, if it's a little organization that we know about that is collecting their money from a few members as dues, and they're spending thousands of dollars on advertising, well, you almost immediately know they don't collect that much money from a few members in their organization. So they are probably receiving income from another source. So this would require them to list the past year and their income, the three largest contributors to their funds, so we know who's making it. Also, as you read on in Section C, there is a disclosure and a penalty. I didn't see much purpose in putting in a law they had to do something and then not requiring penalties to, more or less, if they violated, well, it's too bad. There's no penalty. So the penalty states that any organization that fails to disclose or disclose as required by this section is liable in a civil action brought by the Attorney General, District or County Attorney, or City or Town Attorney as appropriate for a civil penalty up to three times the total amount of the expenditure. So we figured this should get their attention, and if they did violate it, then there would be a penalty that they'd have to pay. Be happy to try to answer questions.
Discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, Senator Perkins.
Question on the amendment, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One, while I appreciate the spirit for the disclosure requirements, the first question I would have is, ultimately, how do you really enforce the disclosure of those individuals? If an organization, what are they called, 541s? Is that the group of 541? And so they can go in any other state and they can make another entity, which could be a PAC, it could be a limited liability company, it could be a little corporation, and then funnel some money to that corporation, and then all of a sudden you have a completely different name that's unattached to anything else. I mean, I see that as a I appreciate the disclosure. I'm just wondering how do we get to the source of this, because I see an easy way around it to avoid having to make that disclosure. So that's question number one. Question number two would be new subsection C about the right to go after somebody like that. Most attorney generals, district or county prosecuting attorneys or district attorneys or the city and town attorneys are so busy, I don't know how you're going to effectively provide that. Now, there may be somebody who in pursuit of truth, justice, and the American way, wants to take that on and go after that. And if there's a lot of money at stake, I don't know where the money goes, but maybe the civil penalty goes to the schools or the policemen's, the widows and orphans benefit fund. Maybe that's an incentive enough. But it seemed to me that maybe that, is there any thought about maybe expanding that to where an individual could? I mean, ultimately, you may have a party, a political party, an individual campaign, or another corporation may want to take that on just because they perceive that to be really an equity, and there's not, may not be an adequate remedy with the workload that our local attorney, local public attorneys already have. So those are the two questions I have for you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, responding to a couple of the questions, at least in part, I was a member of the committee and I voted for this particular amendment. On with regard to the first question, suppose they go poke up an organization in some other state and the disclosure is that XYZ Citizens for Good Government pay. You can't entirely prevent that, but if there's a bunch of that sort of thing, you know somebody's embarrassed to put their name on it, which is very different from the current circumstance where nobody does because nobody's required to. So you have learned a fair amount, even if the disclosure doesn't let you get at the individuals, you've at least learned that somebody was something to hide. And so you've made some progress. So, yeah, you can get around it, but at the cost of making the voters suspicious of what you're doing. With regard to where they go, Constitution provides common school fund. So I can't see calling it a civil penalty, all fines and forfeitures. I think it goes to common school fund.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to track this through, and I know it was, I think, said that this included issues also and just not campaign committees. But when I tracked it through, I didn't see the proposition in these in this language or in the bill. Maybe it's in another section that may be related to that said that you had to disclose on the issues, which would be like ballot initiatives or constitutional amendments or different things like that. So maybe some clarity on that as how that tracks through, whether it does or doesn't. The other question would be is if you had an organization that necessarily you didn't have the top three, but everybody put in $100 or everybody put in $200 as we do with certain organizations we have here, would you have to list all of those people because they are all equal? On that. I also see a problem if there are lengthy names or things like that. You could have a 30-second commercial, and the candidate would speak for 10 seconds, and then you'd have 20 seconds worth of disclosures. Perhaps maybe an alternative to that would be a requirement that you would have to list the Secretary of State's telephone number and website, because all of this is public information anyway. And so if somebody was really curious about who actually paid for this and wanted to drill down in and find out who all the contributors were, then they could simply go to that website or make that telephone call and proceed from there.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. When the Supreme Court ruled, they did talk about the issue of ballot propositions and issues as well as candidates. Our law with respect to ballot propositions is already in conformance, so we did not amend that section. So that may be a little bit the good senator from Goshen County that may get to that part of his question. And now, with regards to the amendment, I was the only one that voted against the amendment in committee. That's why it should have been a standing committee amendment and should be treated as such, should have been treated as such today. But I do see the enforceability of this as being a problem. I also wonder, for a lot of entities, I'm really kind of a purist, and you know I'm way on one side, more on the, I suppose, the most liberal libertarian kind of thinking. But I come back to when the Constitution of the United States was proposed, and people wrote in favor of the Constitution anonymously. They did it throughout the colonies, and they had to do it because the Crown, for example, would have between the, well, the Constitution came, of course, after the Revolution, but they were fearful of the political climate. And politics was even wilder back then, so they actually wrote a lot of the Federalist Papers, for example, were written anonymously, and other pleadings in support. So I'm sort of like thinking, I don't know if I condone anonymous expenditures, but I'm not sure that having all this disclosure and kind of dragging this out ad nauseum, it doesn't have its own chilling effect on free speech, and that's kind of where I come about. But I was the only no vote against this amendment in committee. It should have been a standing committee amendment.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, to try to answer some of the concerns and questions, the one, and perhaps I should have done more background work, but we currently, if you go to put any of us as individuals or a committee goes to get an ad, boy, that's the first thing they want to know, who's going to pay for it. And they have that in the paper. They have it on the announcements. And I'm not familiar with our law on that, but apparently the news media is very familiar with that and require it. If it is state law, then it would be the same. This would just add that section to it, and I think the news media would be the ones that would ask for that. And I assume if I wouldn't say that I was paying for it, the ad wouldn't go in. So I don't believe that overall is probably a big concern. The other issue of, and it's no different than any of the other laws we have with our state, county, or city attorneys, that they're all busy, and most of the time I think you'll see many of our bills that come through, we add penalties and things that make more work for them. And so, well, that's a concern. It's a concern, I guess you'd call it, of good government. I don't know if all the questions have been answered or discussed for sure. I think maybe the senator from Goshen County have one that I don't recall at this time. If he wants to bring it forward, I'll try to address it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it would be if you had contributors who were contributed the same amount of money, but it was more than three, and let's say you had 10 contributors, or in this case 20, let's say you had 26 contributors that contributed $200 each, and that particular organization ran an ad for a candidate. Would it be a requirement, because they were all the same $200 contribution, that you would have to list all 26 contributors in that particular disclosure, which may take more than 30 seconds on the ad just for the disclosure? So that's one question. So if we could answer how we manage that. And the other one was, I didn't see where this was specific to issues, because frankly I have a problem with out-of-state individuals coming in and trying to buy the hearts and minds of Wyoming folks in ballot initiatives. And it'd be nice to know what happens in those circumstances. So those were the two issues that I had. I didn't see where issues were tied in. I saw campaign committees and those areas, but I didn't see it, that it was in support of issues.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, a campaign doesn't have to be for an individual. A campaign can be for an issue, an individual, whatever the issue is that's coming up that people are going to vote for. The issue of tie, That hasn't been discussed normally, and I can see the problem with that. Anytime you're listing 1, 2, and 3, you list, if 1 or 2 a tie, you list them all as a tie, which could be a problem in this area that we didn't address, that I haven't addressed. It's something that perhaps I need to look at and come forward in a future amendment.
Senator Meyer?
The other question I'd have is, let's say you have three people that put $1,000 in, and the ad is out and it's running, and you've got an ad buy for 2 weeks. And as soon as you purchase that ad, someone comes in the door and gives you $1,001. Then what do you do at that point in time? Are you in violation? Do you have to go back in and recut the ad? How does that work during the campaign season, you may get money on a continuing basis, and your top three might change?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that if you go downstairs to the elections department, that you'll find that a lot of this has already been taken care of on the public notice. And they've done a pretty good job of circulating the rules that they've developed down there that we've sent them and the federal government sent them. You can pretty much go on there and log on to see whatever anybody has donated or contributed is listed there, and there's threshold dates and whatnot. And I agree with the senator from over in the corner of the state there. He, as you go through the campaign, and these things change. So I think that probably if we vote on this, we should vote it down and then come back, spend some time downstairs, really find out what the system is down there. Because those guys down there have worked hard on the system, and they really, they're developing quite a way to be transparent in campaigns. And I think we should use that system for this, and it'll make this a whole lot easier.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, the system that we have now requires reporting, and that's for us as candidates. And I'm not aware of how the law goes. That would need to be checked out on if you're candidates, if you're an issue that is being a campaign, whether it's set up the same way or not. It's something that I think these things, by a little more work, that I can answer the questions, but I think it's something important that we need to consider, because when you just hear a name, you don't know anything about who's behind it. If it's a name and a group in Wyoming that we're familiar with, we have no problem, unless they're spending huge amount of monies that we're pretty sure they don't collect from the members. An independent expenditure, a name comes up that they're just using it, that they're the committee to elect or defeat or support something, we have no idea currently where they get their funds. And by putting this amendment in, then we can find some of that information out and see whether it's a group that really doing it for self-interest, a group that's interested in the public. So I think we need to move it along and work on some problems if they are in the amendment. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none and hearing the question, all those in favor of Senator Hines' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion carries. Let's see. Back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Question has been called on the bill. Seeing no further discussion. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. Will the reading clerk please read in the file?
Senate File 14, Counties, Election Districts, and Act Relating to County Commissions, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, and Scott. No, Senator Johnson and Martin. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 14, Counties, Election Districts. Mr. Chairman, for the first time in Wyoming's history, we now have county districts in one county in Wyoming. In fact, the general election to fill those county districts actually happened yesterday. And the reason it happened yesterday is because it was in response to a court order in a voters' rights lawsuit. And, Mr. Chairman, the problem that that county faces, and all counties face, is once you begin to have districts, you face the issue of redistricting your county. Because, like the legislature, the population of county commissioner districts will change, and it will need to be reestablished to conform with population in the Voter Rights Act, or the 14th Amendment and as implemented in the Voter Rights Act, U.S. law. So, Mr. Chairman, that's mostly what this bill does. It also provides for flexibility in the form of those districts. Right now, if you look in our law, since we've never successfully had any county adopt districts, we really don't know how to do it. And our law isn't very clear about it. Our law provides that you can district a county upon the success of a ballot proposition. And it can only be done in the instance of five commissioners. And that you can't do it for three commissioners, and that after it is done, the Board of County Commissioners decides what the form of those districts shall be. It's kind of a two-step process. First, the voters sign a petition, makes it on the ballot passes, we have districts, the county, we're going to have districts, the county commissioners establish what those districts are. There's very little framework for what happens if a commissioner lives in the district or doesn't, or do you try to accommodate existing commissioners? It's a very lack of clarity in the law. Not to mention the fact that you have this issue of redistricting a county. Now, here's the problem that the county faces that's under the court order, is that their district's going to impact today. They, along with the Wyoming legislature, will be establishing new districts according to population in a process to begin with the release of the census information in March. So they're kind of stuck in the same boat we are about that. No guidelines in the law how to do it. This bill provides kind of in two areas. It provides for the ability to have districts that are something other than single-member districts as we traditionally think of them for our legislative seats. Why would we want that? I have received correspondence from a very large county in western Wyoming that talks about the inability to divide their county into five equal population areas because there's really no logical way to do that. And what they say is we can find a logical way to divide it up into four areas And we would like to have the ability to have one commissioner serve at large. This bill would provide for that possibility. Now, you got to understand the court case up in Fremont County. I'm sorry, up in the county that has District Now. And now you know who that is, which you probably knew already. This bill is not meant to affect the court case or the order that's come out of that court case right now. And it specifically does so because if you notice there's a sunset or a implementation clause on page 2, line 15, where it says beginning January 1st, 2012, you may establish these kind of districts. And that's specifically put in there not to give any indication to any of the parties in the court that this legislature is trying to derive that outcome. What we're really talking about is on page 3, section K, which talks about the future court cases that come about, or redistricting, and what would be the options available to counties to do so. And again, you can see that the heart of this, I suppose, is on page 3, lines 19 through continuing on. It says a districting or redistricting plan devised under this subsection may include single-member districts in which the candidates must reside and which are apportioned by population, comma, districts in which candidates are elected at large, comma, or any combination of districts in which candidates must reside and are apportioned by population or are elected at large, provided that in all cases commissioners represent a population as nearly equal as practicable, considering the geographic, economic, and social characteristics of the county. And what that's trying to say is we give you this tool, county commissioners, to decide your redistricting plan. Now, one other proposal that has been made is that, you know, well, let me say this, Mr. Chairman. When it comes to districts in the legislature, you either have people that love it or you have people that hate it. And you get it all the time. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. People say, well, you get too territorial about your districts. The elections become uncontested. It tends to squeeze out minority candidates. It tends to squeeze out female candidates. Incumbents always win. You've heard it. Da 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 da. Other people say, we never had an legislator elected until you districted, and finally we got some representation. It's all over the map. One possible way that a county could approach this is to have residence areas like we have for perhaps community colleges or other taxation districts, where indeed someone has a residency requirement, but they live in a particular district, but they're elected at large. Perhaps, and only perhaps, this would kind of bridge the territorial paternalism that happens because you really have to stand for election for the entire area. I have no idea if that's a good idea or not, but this provides that option. Now, this was controversial in the committee. It was a divided vote, 3-2. What happens if we don't pass this bill? We have the problem of redistricting for the one county that now must have districts. And frankly, they don't have a lot of guidelines in the law how to do that. And which commissioners stand for election if the population changes too much and which don't? Who serves what term? They don't have a lot of guideline without this law. So I throw it open to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions I can. There's strong opinions on the committee, and they have the ability to talk it out as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two ways to look at it. I guess get better representation out of it, or you grow government either way. But maybe a little further explanation out on 4, down along the lines of terms of all commissioners serving the time of approval of the districting plan shall expire at the end of the current year and replace at the general election. Could you just explain that to me a little more, please?
Senator Case.
You're referring to page 4, lines 15 through 19. Is that right? Um, I think let's read the whole section together, if you will. It says, an initial districting plan created under this subsection, and this is the one that it's either, it has to be a court order. That would be how that had happened. Shall provide for at least 51% of the commissioners to serve an initial term of 2 years, and the remainder to serve an initial term of 4 years. That's so that you're, no matter how you cut this, you're going to have a staggered commission, so that not everybody's term comes up at the same time. Thereafter, all terms shall be 4 years. So you serve your first initial term of two, then afterwards you do four. That sounds kind of strange, but that's exactly what we did when we redistricted the legislature in 1992, which resulted in the first election of some of the senators in this room in 1993. The terms of all commissioners serving at the time of the approval of the districting plan shall expire at the end of the current year, and all offices created under this subsection shall be filled at the general election held on the effective date of the districting plan. Remember, this is in response to a court order. And so what happened in the only case that's been implemented in Wyoming is that current law says when you implement redistricting, some commissioners get a stay on and serve out their term and represent at large until their terms expire, even though you now have districts. That's current law. That would not conform to the court ruling that said you need to implement districts in this particular county. And so what they did was they kind of looked in the middle, and it ended up that we have districts where two incumbent commissioners are serving out the rest of their terms as if they represent that district. Wyoming law says they have to serve at large, but they are, because we're trying to implement the court order. You see the mess? So you're trying to make, you have to, the court law trumps because the 14th Amendment of the Constitution and voter issues trump, but we're trying to make it conform to state law. So, the good senator, that's why it's kind of confusing and you have, but it says when you have a court order that throws everything out the window, everybody expires at the end of the year and you start over again and you have to have a combination of two-year and three-year terms. If you think about it, I think it's the only way that really works and conforms to our law. More questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you all remember that I was one of the no votes on this in committee. That was several reasons. First of all, I think this invites manipulation. And I don't like that. I like level playing fields. Let's just do it all at large or all single-member districts like the legislature is. In our current statutes on the legislature, my understanding is we could set up multi-member districts as long as there was the one-person, one-vote following that the courts decided, but we don't. We have single-member districts. Your constituents know who they can contact in this body and in the body on the East End. There's no doubt in their mind. Now, we had an election. Well, there's a large population county in the southeast part of the state. This past November, this county had an election. There were two questions. One, go from 3 to 5 commissioners, and two single-member districts. The voters voted for 5 commissioners, but they turned down the single-member districts. And the reason they did this was they felt that if they went to single-member districts, they could only call their commissioner if they got a hold of another commissioner who's not representing them. They would be told, I don't care what you think. You're not in my district. And they wanted to be able to get a hold of all of them at large. And that's the way it's going to be. The additional ones will come on in the election in 2012. As far as the court ruling, I also understand that there was some a request to the court of doing single-member districts and at-large districts and everything else in the unknown county in the middle of the state, and the judge says no, single-member districts based on population, period. Whether that has anything to do with Senate File 14 or not, I don't know. But I'm going to go back to where I think we ought to keep it simple, where everybody understands it, either at large, where everybody votes for everybody, or single-member districts where the people know who represents them and the commissioners know who they represent. So if we defeat this bill, we still have something to fall back on. The next election is in 2012. We have the budget session between now and 2012 to come up with another bill that will become effective for that election.
Senator Barnard. Mr. Chairman, I have some questions for the good senator from Fremont County. It says on line, page 3, line 17, that they can devise any number of districts. So does that mean you can have a county that has 20 districts if that county wants to? Or am I reading that wrong?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's there is some flexibility there. I think you could have a combination of three districts and two at-large, for example, something like that. So it is any number of districts. It doesn't change the number of commissioners. Let me be clear about that. That's in existing law, and our choices are three commissioners or five commissioners. Nobody's trying to change that. Under existing law, the only time you can have districts is if you have five commissioners. And those, interestingly enough, you don't have to decide those things at the same time. And so there's an incongruity in the law. If I might pick up, the heart of this issue is, you know, we still need a bill for guidelines for redistricting. And so you, this bill could certainly be amended to require single-member districts everywhere that it's proposed that we have flexibility. So if you don't like the idea of what's called hybrid districts or combinations or the residency areas, and you like, as been proposed by my very fine colleague from Laramie County, to be solely single-member districts, and that's your option, you can easily amend this bill to do that, and I will help you with the amendment. But honestly, the bill is needed for other reasons, because there has to be a little bit of guideline. For example, in this particular instance, the population data that was used by the court, I don't know how old it is, but it's going to be dramatically different. So they're going to, as soon as they rework the boundary lines to conform with population and put forth a new plan, they're going to have to decide who has four-year terms, who doesn't, or has the population shifted so dramatically that we're all going to stand again. That's not really provided in the law. All the law says now is that when you go to districting, let me find it. It's in your bill. It's the old language on starting on line 21. It says commissioners in office on the effective date of the districting plan shall serve the county at large until the regular expiration of the term. That's the only guideline that counties have. How does that accommodate redistricting? It doesn't. It doesn't accommodate the court order. So this bill can be amended to be exclusively single-member districts. I'll help you to do that. I'll fight you when you get it on the floor. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We still need a bill.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, page 3, line 21. And in view of the recent controversy, I was just wondering if that one phrase, candidates must reside, if that needs further clarification or has that been addressed in another forum? In view of the, this is page 3, line 21. In view of a recent controversy, I was just wondering if the phrase, candidates must reside, if that needs further clarification, further definition, or is that being addressed in another forum or in another section somewhere?
Thank you, Senator Escobel. Senator Case, let's wait for another question. Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to that last question, absent that particular provision, potentially with the counties, you might have a situation where you could get a candidate who did not reside, and it might be legal. In the legislative case, you've got a constitutional requirement for residency. I don't find that with the counties. So, absent this particular statute, it's one of the reasons you need to pass this thing. You have a districted county. Somebody tries to run in a district he's not a resident of. We would normally think you can't do that. But I don't find anything that says you can. This does. Now, you always have an issue with regard to residency. The law is surprisingly loose as to what residency is. It has a good deal to do with intent. And people that have more than one place that they have some attachment to, it's very difficult to say this is his residence and that isn't. You almost go with what the person says. And then it's been a matter of dispute in quite a number of places. So I don't think you need a clarification here, but you do need this statement. It's one illustration of why you need this bill. You need this statement to avoid the argument of where there's no question he's resident well outside the district, but he tried to file and run from that district. A different district. You don't have the statement there. How do you deal with that? Yeah, this whole business of districting counties, we've had apparently an authorization where you can do it. Nobody's done it. So it's got some holes in it. And you do need the ability to allow the local folks to be sensible if they decide to district. And I think it's Lincoln County, where if they should choose to district a single-member district system, gives you a district somewhere that's difficult, impossible, splits between the Star Valley and the northern half. Whereas if you did one at large, two in the southern half, two in the northern half, you'd have some districts that made some sense. And that might be an entirely rational reason for that county to do things that way, but you've got to have a statute that permits them to do that. And this would. Now, as a general rule, Mr. Chairman, I think at-large is much better than districts. I think when you go to a district system, you tend to, one, talk about manipulation. You know, gerrymander is an ancient and dishonored approach, an almost universal approach to redistricting here in the United States. And, you know, Governor Gary set a standard for doing that has not been achieved since. And you can look and see, the state of Massachusetts has not been troubled by a Federalist majority in its legislature since Governor Gary did his work. And nobody else has come up to that standard since. But it's a problem with any kind of a districting system. You also, when you've got a single-member district, whether, say, it's a rural population that has one district and an urban population has the other four, fairly likely scenario in Wyoming if you go to district system. Well, the four urban people, who are a majority, don't have to pay any attention to the rural folks in it. Rural folks are much better protected with an at-large system where they have some influence on all five commissioners. You can comment on what's likely to come in particular circumstances. I don't think it makes a difference whether you have just one single-member district and a four-member district, or you have five single-member districts. You're likely to have that effect in just the same amount. So what I would urge the Senate, we need some basic rules because we're getting a district system involuntarily. There's some other places where they may make sense if the rules are such that you can have some flexibility to make them sense. So we need this bill where we clarify the current state of the law, and I think the way it's written gives the local people flexibility to be sensible on that, and I think we've just seen an illustration of that. So, Mr. Chairman, I was in a high vote in committee, and I do urge the Senate to adopt the bill, and frankly, I urge the Senate to adopt the bill without major amendments.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier there was a question brought up about, you know, whether you could create any number of districts under this legislation. And if I can refer you to 183501, Section G in the statutes, it only permits the division of five districts when you go to five commissioners. And so if the electorate decides to go to five commissioners, then you can have five districts. But that's the only number that you can have is five, according to the statutes as they are today.
Question.
Question has been called.
Thank you, Charlie.
Let's see. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 14, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. Senate File 14 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
Thank you. You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We don't have anything that we need to do.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S18 to discuss Senate Joint Resolution 6, Environmental Protection Agency Regulations.
Thank you, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet at 1 o'clock in room 302 to continue receiving testimony on Senate File 70, Accountability.
Thank you, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. 2, Appropriations, will meet at 12:30 to go over A&I.
Thank you, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We'll hear the following bills: Senate File 45, Professional Services Procurement; Senate File 12, County Authority Smoking Bans; Senate File 54, Disability Insurance Rates Notice. We're bringing in a few extra chairs. We're expecting maybe there might be a pretty good crowd for Senate File 12, so I think the committee room will be able to accommodate it. If we have to move, we may consider that.
Thanks, Senator Kaysen. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules, will meet tomorrow morning in room S5 at 8 a.m. to consider the following Senate files: Senate File 69, Revisers Bill; Senate File 95, Legislative Committee Membership. And if I may have privilege of the floor for a moment, once again, need to remind you about the photographer that's still here. Get those pictures done today, folks, if you can. I was advised that it's been pretty slow. Maybe some of you don't want your pictures taken, but I urge you to do it. It could be
a registration
base.
Okay. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. up in S14, where we will take up Senate File 62, Large Project Funding. That's the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Fund. Senate File 39, Aquatic Invasive Species Reciprocity. Senate File 79, Recreation Safety Act Waiver on behalf of minors, and Senate File 63, Game and Fish Donation of Hunting Licenses.
Thank you. Are there any other announcements? Seeing none, the Senate shall stand recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.